we felt like there needed to be a change in definition. So, trying to find
Marcher's one.
Okay, because, what we had yesterday, I think, is what we should consider. That we were talking about earlier in the morning and stuff, so.
Do you want to incorporate that in action, using that definition of homeless as a basis for the study, so that you could use the same definition and get the same information?
I guess I just want to reiterate that we should not, the thing that I would like to include in the definition is that just because you have a roof over your head doesn't mean that you have a home. I think that's one of the things that we should, that I want to come out in this rural homeless subcommittee, is that there is overcrowding in rural areas. And I can't overemphasize that, but does anybody have a problem with the wording on this first recommendation?
Did this, yesterday, didn't we come up with a definition of homelessness from another state?
Yes, that
would,
was...
would also include a large households or a larger than usual household that would normally be living separately?
Yes, Jim. The ones that, the page that we got on the definition that Kentucky came up with is the one I think that will, are we going to adopt that?
Jim, do you want me to read that to you again? I don't know that if you have a copy of it. Would you like to hear it again?
I would. I don't have a copy.
Okay. The Kentucky CHAZ will say, a homeless family or individual is one without a home and the lack or inability to access decent, affordable housing, and expands to include those individuals in extremely overcrowded conditions because no other housing existed for them, and those individuals who live in housing conditions which are substandard, unsafe, not sanitary, or adequate, which sounds to me like it would cover most of rural Alaska.
Yeah, then maybe we ought to add into this action needed here, or into the recommendation, the availability and condition of housing as defined by the definition of homelessness.
Okay, we can do that, and I could just make reference to recommendation A17, whatever that turns into. Okay.
This is Mitzi. I guess I'd like to know whether the subcommittee felt that there really needed to be a whole separate study, or rather that the CHAZ really needs to emphasize this, because the CHAZ meeting this year was a little abbreviated, but we're actually supposed to do this.
The cultural differences, that was what was being focused on so intensively, was a real hard look at the differences in the various cultures around the state, because not only is Native culture different from urban white culture, but the Native cultures in different regions are different from each other.
You know, we did talk about that in the CHAZ steering committee, and with the time frame we had to do CHAZ, we didn't have a chance to adequately address it. I would think we would have a more implementable, is that a word, strategy if we linked it with something that's currently an existing process, but go on to state with involvement of these specific Native entities as part of that process and as advisors on this particular piece.
There's another question that I would like to address. We have different studies that have come about because of the homeless issue. I think that we should look at them more closely to see if they're specific in the different areas. Like, there is differences in cultures, like the Indian and the Eskimos and the different regions and stuff, and I can't overemphasize that point also.
Mm-hmm. One of the concerns that I have, just as somebody who has tried to use a lot of those different studies, is that there's a lack of real consistency in how they're done and in how the results are reported. And if there isn't how to do some coordination. I'm not suggesting all this sort of CHAZ going to gobble this all up, but that somehow there'd be that process be involved so that there's some consistency if these are all done by separate groups, so that we can really use the information in the development of state housing policy. Right now it's kind of
another point that I would like to ask also that we look into is different agencies have come up with different studies. If we could consolidate the information and see if there's any overlap in anything, then we should try to.
Well, and not only in CHESS, but that to some extent, that's what we'll be doing in this report. Even we'll be pulling out recommendations from another, a number of pertinent other studies or you know work groups or whatever, and putting them in as appendices so that at least you can get the recommendations from a number of different groups in your hand in one document. But you know, in terms of analyzing them all, that's not something we've really talked about. But that would be something that the coalition could do too, as you know, if they ever got staff, it could be a long-term project for the coalition to try and pull together all those different recommendations, find the ones that are similar enough, and come up with sort of a continuation of what we're doing here. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we recommend that specifically, and we maybe could, and especially maybe one of the places where we talk about the information clearinghouse and all of that, which we've kind of geared, focused on the task force for, or the coalition for.
What is the, for the rural housing associations or the housing, you know, like Kim Johnson?
Yeah.
What, they're out there, and I would think they would be a good resource to put, you know, I don't know how much information you got through them to do the CHAZ, but if we could encourage them and put them under the who can do this kind of thing, that,
that's the Alaska. That's the Alaska Association of Housing Authorities.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, didn't we, the coalition, just put one of them on our board? Now, have we got a name from them yet? See, that, I don't really understand, maybe this is political naivete, but why do we have such a problem involving those regional housing authorities with the coalition? And
well,
with other activities like this?
I can kind of respond to that, Marsh can probably illuminate it. We had them involved in the CHAZ process, and in fact, when Barbara Bennett and Gary Manzik and Glenda Straube attempted to try and pull together some of the homelessness information, we contacted each and every regional housing authority. And the response that we got from most of them is, we don't deal with that.
Don't deal with what?
Homelessness. And one of the things I think we have to recognize about the IHAs is that many of them recognize their mission as being very narrow, and that is building housing under the Mutual Health Housing Program. So it's important to involve them, but I don't know that it's appropriate or effective to say, okay, guys, go do this. Because they don't see it as something that they're necessarily charged with doing, but certainly there's a role for them to be involved.
Well, and I don't think they really recognize that the overcrowded conditions are homeless, you know, and that the families that are moving from family to family to for survival are really homeless. They look at, I assume, or kind of look at it, that taking care of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's an education that process that they need to learn. But I know some of the Indian housing authorities are not even utilizing that preference list that HUD mandates that we do.
One of the things that they'll say is that we're not funded to do that. And indeed they're not.
Yeah. Okay, I have another question too. We said in one of our recommendations that we should have a study in order to, in the explanation, in order to begin to understand the nature of rural homelessness, a study is badly needed. This study should describe the amount of rural housing, its adequacy, including whether there is enough space for the people living in it, and the physical condition of the living space, and a description of the cultural values of the region, and how that affects the way families are housed. How are the, how is the coalition addressing that? Do you have, specific information that you draw out, or is this a new?
It's
new to the coalition, also, isn't it?
The DACRA study did some of these things.
The DCRA
study, and you know, a recommendation like this might provide some impetus for that study to continue as that function is brought into the merger.
Is it, how thorough is the DCRA study? Is it thorough? Does it cover all the regions, or is it just?
It covers most of the regions. It probably doesn't cover the cultural questions as well as it ought to. It has some severe problems with methodological issues, how they collected the data, how some of it was correlated. There's problems in using the data. I was talking about the state housing policy context because most of it is on, there are different databases that don't necessarily correlate. There's a lot of technical problems, let me just put it that way. Then it's like apples and oranges trying to use the data. They didn't use, we talked about definitions yesterday, they didn't use any standard definitions that are used in some of the broader housing world. A lot of disconnects. But the basic concept is there, and there has been, you know, some history of having done that study. It was done in 1988. It was updated again last year. And I know that DCRA has been wanting to continue to update that, and that's an issue that, in fact, the moment I'm looking at, because that will become kind of under the function of my office at AHFC. Certainly, I think it's an important piece of what we need versus just that state housing policy as is embodied in the CHAZ process.
Mitzi, what is the purpose of that study? That's to decide how much more money should go into housing in the rural areas? Or what do you think?
It's just as a pause, would you like me to pass out the condensed recommendations from that summary as long as we're talking about it? I have them here. Okay.
Yeah, I've never seen
that. The purpose of that study has not strictly been so much on identifying housing need as on, this is going to sound really crass, but as on justifying a continuing need for the weatherization program. There has been a real focus on energy efficiency and weatherization-type rehabilitation, although it does count how many units they feel need 500 to 600 square foot expansions to accommodate overcrowding and how many additional new housing units are needed. But that hasn't been the real emphasis. And none of it's been really been done on a total income stratification kind of basis. You know, that's a piece that's kind of missing in there. The 1991 study also kind of looked at an urban piece, and they did this one thing that is difficult for me to incorporate in the CHAZ, in that they made the assumption that all people in rural areas who were native were automatically deserving of housing assistance, but that in urban areas you had to be income eligible. And that's information we really can't use. They didn't break out anything in the urban areas by income. Or by homeless, again, they didn't bring in the homeless definition. And it was really more of a thing to justify the continuing weatherization. That's certainly a legitimate purpose. But right now, that's been kind of the thrust of it. And they did try to expand it. It fell short.
Well, I was just thinking if we can, if the purpose was close, maybe, you know, if it ever gets done again, who knows if it'll get, maybe, you know.
Is this something that the extra money that AHFC is getting could be used for? Does that have to go for housing and loans? Could you do a study with that?
Internally, we could do a study because internally our budget comes from our earnings anyway. It would have to be part of our budget. But so whether we took those funds and paid somebody else to do the study or whether we did it internally, you know, we could do it internally and contract it out just out of our own budget.
Uh-huh.
Speaking, you know, as the CHAZ coordinator, it's a big piece that needs to be done for CHAZ. You know, we used a lot of this study. We could not use as much of it as I would like to have been able to use. If we can bring it into a level of data consistency, if we can address the income stratification issues that need to be in here, and if we can pull it into a broader affordable housing focus, which, by the way, also embraces the weatherization energy efficiency issue. I suspect there's going to be something done like this to continue to assure federal funding for the weatherization program, which AHFC is also going to be taking on.
Oh, it is?
Hmm? That's coming over.
Oh, I didn't realize you were getting that. Oh.
All the DCRA housing programs.
Whoa.
So I guess what I'm saying is it's not dead. I don't know that AHFC management is really aware this is a piece yet that has to be done. It's part of the work I'm doing.
But we could make sure they do know that through this.
Right.
Okay.
Or if and to incorporate these concerns within that study, mm-hmm. is that a possibility? If in fact that you folks do that again, then we can, you know, there's no sense doing two or three studies that bugging people more than,
I guess, and that's kind of what I was trying to get at. What I would like to see the recommendation kind of take shape that says, this has been done in the past. It has some inadequacies. it definitely needs the cultural piece. It needs to have involvement from these other entities that the subcommittee described. And then that also needs to be part and parcel of the CHAZ process. I think there's a legitimacy in having a separate study targeted at that, but then that also be incorporated into CHAZ. So that something happens with it. That's the mechanism for something to happen with it.
I went to the public hearing that they had with Senator Mikowski and in a way, but I went there mainly for the housing issue, but they didn't cover that as much as I thought they would, because people were able to present proof that there is a need. I think we have to think about real statistics right here. If we want things to get done, I think in the rural, there has to be a need, real need assessment made in the rural areas if we're going to get anything done. And I think it's important that a study, a thorough study, but I don't know what kind of method to use or not.
And I think that can be done, and I think a good base for that is the CHAZ report, because that CHAZ benefits the whole state. And I think if we just get the pieces, that will give us the right answers to the questions that Murkowski may ask sometime about housing in the rural areas, that we could incorporate that in the CHAZ and just one shot. And how often does that CHAZ get redone? 2 years?
There's an annual update. The full CHAZ has to be done every 5 years. But we're looking at doing another full CHAZ within the next year.
You are?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because we didn't have, well, because our state has access to 90 census data before HUD will be releasing it. The reason that HUD's let everybody off the hook until fiscal year 1994 is because the department said that they would provide the data. Through contract with the Department of Labor, they are crunching housing data on a priority basis for me as soon as they get it. So we can go ahead and proceed with that. As we were talking yesterday, because there's been so little change, for instance, in the housing stock since 1990, we have a fairly high degree of confidence in being able to use that data. Strategically speaking, if you marry this to the CHAZ concept, it helps secure the fact that it's going to get done, because CHAZ has to be done.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, gee, we need to do another study, which is going to ring dollar signs somewhere.
Yeah, the funding would be a big barrier to getting this done. Okay, so to reword this, what would we want to say? Something like, when the CHAZ is updated? How would we word this, Mitzi?
Why don't we just recommend the study and then also recommend that the results be included in the next CHAZ?
Well, I guess what we're hoping is that in the CHAZ process, DCRA would do the study, whereas if we recommend a study, the results of which would be given to the CHAZ.
Okay.
I think it's all in what you state first. I think if we say the CHAZ process needs to incorporate a comprehensive study of things that are listed here.
CHAZ comes up with the best wording.
It should involve all of these people and organizations.
Okay.
It's just a matter of putting the right thing up front and making up words.
Needs to incorporate a comprehensive study that assesses. So would we just
like that assesses, you know, the various cultural regions? If that's, you know, the terminology that the committee wants to use. The availability of efficient housing was recognized, the cultural differences. And I think then we also need to plug in here the piece about that was also recognized the nature of homelessness as well as,
well, here's what I have.
What finds extent.
So here's what I've got. See if this does it. The CHAZ process needs to incorporate a comprehensive study that assesses in the various cultural regions of rural Alaska the availability and condition of housing as defined, maybe the availability, condition and adequacy of housing as defined by the definition in recommendation A17, the Kentucky definition. Would that be broad enough?
I want affordability in there too.
Okay, the availability, affordability, condition, and adequacy. I mean, these are all factors. That's true.
Well, that also hits like that weatherization piece because of the operating cost of the dwelling impacts affordability.
I should mention Marilyn Scoter has joined us in Homer.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning. You were kind of hard to find today, but I got you.
We're looking, in the packet that I sent to you, we're looking at section D. We're discussing the first recommendation, number D1.
Thank you.
Okay. We all just got back from Fairbanks.
Okay. So, and under the who can do this, did you finish?
I think. Well, then, you know, leave the last sentence. The study must acknowledge differences in what is culturally acceptable in various regions. Is that, we want to state that, culturally acceptable? Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think we're done with that.
And then the who can do it?
Who can, no, how do we say this?
HSC is responsible for the CHAZ.
Okay.
And they're still here. We're still here.
Is that what it's still called?
Yes, that's what it's still called.
Okay. All right, so who can do this? HFC.
And I think you want to include with cooperation of or participation from all these other groups.
Oh, okay.
I think we want to name them. I think we want to start putting the Native corporations and associations and other agencies of the federal government on notice that they're going to be asked to be involved.
I think that's one thing that we... in one of our meetings, in order for some of this to be done, the communities themselves have to be involved. You know, that's all.
Then maybe we need to say that, the village councils.
Well, I think we covered that
regionally, Native corporations or associations. We don't really say village councils, which are different local government, including village councils.
Or tribal councils.
Okay. Okay, local government, including village or tribal councils. Anybody else?
I think we're going to have to get the different regional housing authorities. I mean, you know, each Alaska is divided into different
Native
corporations.
Yeah, we need to put regional housing authorities specifically on here.
So you're going to have to include regional housing.
Got them.
And then I would make entity plural down here, or other and other appropriate entities. Make it inclusive.
Right.
And that would include the church groups.
Right, that would allow us to include the churches without specifying any particular ones here. This is exciting. I mean, I'll finally get the impetus to do this, and I wanted to.
Well, this is certainly needed.
How about the coalition?
Okay. Well,
they need to be involved. We're not putting. See, we're saying your HSC is going to do this thing. It's who all is going to be involved.
Churches. Well, then we should also, you know, if we want to mention people by name, shelters, you know, because there's some. What do you call them? Domestic violence shelters, as well as there's a homeless shelter. I keep hearing this, that there's a shelter for the homeless in Kotzebue. Anyone know about this? I've heard this a couple of times.
Remember,
that's at the Chaz? I don't know. I heard it in the legislature. Somebody told me this.
They have a shelter there for domestic violence.
Is that what they've got? Okay, maybe they're acting as a
Gary put together a whole list that we put in the Chaz.
We also need to keep the private sector involved. I mean, those landlords out there that are renting to our low-income families that have people who are living in crowded conditions or, you know, whatever. So I think the private sector needs to be involved as part of that community.
Okay. Can we just say private sector?
Going back to that explanation, are we going to leave it the way it is on page 2, or are we going to say that Chaz is going to do that?
You need to say.
Well, because we're saying a study needs to be done. We're just saying we incorporate CHAZ.
Yeah, it doesn't mention who's doing it at this point. We're just describing what kind of information what needs to, we want.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we done with...
Actually, maybe I would suggest we strike the first sentence of that paragraph, where it just starts with the study should describe.
Jim, I just got some information on the homeless shelter in Kotzebue. There is a homeless shelter, and it's jointly run by Manila, Kansas City.
Good job.
That's what we can get information on.
Do you know anything more about it, Jim?
That's all I have.
Good work.
Well, thank the phone person here.
Who's that, Adam?
Yes, it is.
How'd you know that?
You just talked to Senator Adams' office to find out.
Good job. You're going to go far.
Okay, are we done with D1?
No. What were you saying, though?
Yeah, Mitzi, what were you saying?
Strike
this study? Well, I was just saying that the first sentence of that paragraph is kind of redundant.
The second page.
In order to begin to understand, strike that, start with this study should.
Okay. Yeah, this prescribes what needs to be in the study.
Okay, done.
Okay, go on to day two.
Okay. I'm not taking much notes.
Okay, recommendation two, action needed, continue and increase funding for revitalization of rural homes. I think this has to go back to when we first started the meeting, when we were trying to come up with a definition of what substandard housing was and stuff. So this, I think I'd still like to keep this in there. Don't you think?
Could we cite CHAZ as one of the sources? Because this was a major priority of CHAZ. In fact, a substantial portion of the home dollars have been targeted to pick up rehab costs that weatherization won't pay for.
So are you proposing outside of putting CHAZ at the bottom or anything else?
That's okay. Okay. Any other comments?
Include in the explanation there that really what we want to do is rehabilitate housing so that it's not substandard.
I was just going to say that. Good job, Jim.
Should include rehab, not just
what did he say? I'm sorry. Mitzi was pointing out an error to me. What did you say, Jim?
I was just saying that in the explanation there, I think we need to make the point that what we're really doing is rehabilitating housing so that it's not substandard.
Oh, that's a good point.
Jim, that's actually different than weatherization. You know, we can broaden this to that point, but weatherization and rehab are two different things.
Well, if we're adopting that Kentucky definition, though, this would fit right into that, where we say that homeless individuals are those who live in housing conditions which are substandard, unsafe, not sanitary, or adequate. And in that DCRA report, they talked at some length about how many homes were unable to be heated or maintained heating at 70 degrees.
Right.
Yeah, so.
We could say to continue increased funding for weatherization and rehabilitation of rural homes, and then we would want, because we are saying the target group is rural Alaskans living in substandard housing rather than just saying people who have high heating bills. And then the explanation, we probably need to also say something then about that the housing needs to be safe and structurally sound as well, because those are the kinds of things that rehab addresses that weatherization does not. For instance, with the home dollars, we look at probably being able to go in, use weatherization money to do energy efficiency type things, but be able to replace roofs and repair foundation and structural problems with home dollars, putting the two things together.
Well, so under who can do this? The state legislature is not really the appropriate entity, is it? It's the federal government. Now, where does that funding come from? What department? Huh? Okay.
So,
and from time to time, there's DOE money.
DOE? So,
Department of Energy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, what on earth? Education and what is it?
Federal Department of Energy.
Okay.
But you know, it might still be appropriate to have the legislature in. I mean, they can and have in the past made appropriation for those purposes.
But they would want to come after HUD and the Department of Energy, so okay, I'll just insert those two entities.
And then the correction was saying that DCRA in this reference needs to be changed to HFC, and then perhaps in Koreans you could put home and energy programs. I guess folks would understand where that is in that monster.
Okay. Got it.
Okay, how would you reword the action needed?
Go ahead. I think it's a continuum and increased funding for weatherization and rehabilitation of rural homes. And then the explanation, I think Jill's got this on the as thing about structural soundness and safety of the homes, which are rehab issues.
And then who can do this? We eliminate the state legislature, right?
No, we just move them down the line so that we put the federal funders up front since they're principal funding sources.
Okay.
Any other comments on D2? D3.
No, as I was saying, I lost my copy of this D section from yesterday, but this came up in the children and youth in section E, didn't it? Yes, I know it did.
Okay, so do we just include this with the children?
I think we're going to combine.
We were going to combine this with another one. Let me just look. D4, E4. Okay, combine with E4. This is bugging me that I can't find that. I don't know what I did with it. Do you have any other notes? Is there anything else we need to talk about on that? I recall discussing this, but without having my copy of that section, I don't know what we said. Domestic violence intervention with alcohol and substance abuse, all kinds of incest and sexual abuse, lots of different kinds of intervention. But the point was made time and again that the people who are going to do the intervention need to be people from the community, people who have a knowledge of the residents, a sensitivity to local problems and culture. Yeah. So what we talked about was having some kind of a team or a designated person from some entity, whether it's someone funded by the state or Alaska Youth and Parent Foundation or a large church group like the Catholic Church, someone as a state, some entity with a statewide presence, could go into communities and train lay people to do these kinds of things.
This might be part of that Safe Harbor program too, or the... I'm trying to find a word, the foster parents, the short-term foster parent program, too.
Well, as y'all know, that all died. We've got to start back at 0 minus, I think, right now.
Don't give up, Marilyn.
I won't.
Ask the governor to put it on his calendar for the subsistence session.
Now, where is he right now?
Yeah. Good question.
Who's hunting? One of the things that we talked about, Marilyn, was that maybe training could be made for part-time foster parents under the foster parent program that might cover what same idea that you folks were trying to get through.
Respite.
For respite, yeah. It was under the title of respite, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, how would you, Gail, before yesterday, did you adopt it the way it was, or were you going to consolidate D3 and D4?
I didn't consolidate. I think we took the D language.
Yeah, I think we did too. So not the positive.
I think we did because that isn't there.
Didn't you say E as in Helmer?
Yes. E4.
Might even be mental health.
Okay, so who can do this? Alaska Youth Parent Foundation. Permanent Health Services and Permanent Youth.
Any other comments? On this one, as part of who can do this, would the school districts be involved? Or shouldn't they be in, should they be involved in helping with the intervention?
I think, this is Ellen, I don't think we should, well, in rural Alaska, a lot of times people are already overextending themselves in the health, like with, who are these people? The health aide, the BPSOs, and the, that work with. I think we should approach people like that to work with training. Well, part of their training.
Do what?
To
have BPSOs and stuff.
And the health aides coordinate something instead of the school. I don't think it should come out of the school. What do you think?
This is Marilyn and Homer, and when we were kicking this around and trying to figure this out ourselves out here, we went to mental health because they had a person there who had skills in parenting. That same type of skills might be found in a person in a lot of different places, maybe in a village that didn't have someone that wanted to be trained, you could bring, as you mentioned before, bring a team in for a short term. It isn't very difficult to get trained in intervention. You can get trained in actual intervention quite quickly. You use the same format that they use in AA.
So did you involve the schools?
No, we did not. We have one counselor from our high school on the Safe Harbor Board, but actually she has been so busy at school, she really hasn't been real involved with Safe Harbor. And we were sort of waiting to get the bill passed to be able to go ahead with this. So as I say, now we're back at zero, and I just don't know who or what personnel in Homer might be next year when we, or come fall when we would attempt to do this again.
Somehow, also, I don't know, maybe we could keep this wrong, that we should ask the public safety department what kind of training they offer BPSOs, because they're usually there to do intervention anyway, but to include runaways and things like that.
Would they have, now I remember one of the meetings, I think it was the one we had on elder abuse and some of the problems of the elderly, that last one, weren't we hearing there though that there was a real, the part of the problem for BPSOs and for the public health nurses was that they're already being asked to take on so much in the community that they're burning out. I just saw a bill, I think it passed, that eliminated overtime for the health aides, I think that's what I saw. I just glanced at it. But anyway, we changed the fair labor standards so that they don't, I don't know, they don't qualify for it or something. But anyway, we heard that they're already being asked to take on so much in the communities because they're really the only public entities or, you know, people to turn to, and that they're not really trained to do counseling and all these other things. So I don't know if we want to add that on to their responsibilities or ask them to take that on.
Okay, then maybe we should just think about training the lay people in the church congregations then.
And this is Missy. I thought in the news that one of the things that we were attempting to do was expand the community resource space by doing just that, so that the nurses and the BPSOs and the schools, the teachers had somebody else to call on.
And that would be part of the team. I think we talked originally about the teams, and the school districts are very critical. Those teachers know what's going on with those kids, and sometimes their hands are tied in getting them or the families steered in directions that they need to go. And I think we were looking at a team concept of resources in helping get, you know, at-risk children at least, as well as the runaways. But I think we were at that time talking about the at-risk children.
Well, you know what I could easily do is add a paragraph here under explanation about the need to expand that team of resources and how this person or these people could work hand in hand with the VPSOs, the public health aides, the school district, and other people who are available so that the needs of the community can be addressed better.
Yeah, I think what we're going to have to start doing is encourage networking even within the small communities to have people who are in key positions like this to respond to these kind of issues, but that they will be able to consolidate what they have already.
This is Marilyn in Oregon. You haven't mentioned the fact that sometimes these dysfunctioning families are the basis of it is alcohol. And say, for instance, you have that in a village, maybe several families, but then you have a recovered alcoholic who is really struggling to recover. Maybe he's never been to a treatment center or anything, but they know if they have done any reading or anything, and those people are A1 type of innovators because they've been there and they understand. They're just like you say, the school teachers, they could be part of this team, and very often a kid runs away. Very often we've seen the kid runs away because he comes home one more time and everybody's sloshed all over the house and he says, that's it, I'm leaving. He runs away from the situation. He doesn't run away per se. He maybe goes to another village or whatever. But I mean, I think this is, your team concept is the one that's going to be a winner with it.
Okay.
I'll put that in.
Oh, for the action, I have a question. It says establish early intervention programs. Without any money, I know, Marilyn, you guys have struggled a lot down there. Can we really say that, or can we say to encourage communities to establish, or how can we word that without saying there's going to be money available to establish these programs?
How about taking programs out for a start and say encourage early intervention?
I think we're basically talking about prevention here. So we're going to have to probably, like you say, reward it.
Encourage prevention and early intervention by training lay people, lay people, members of the community, something.
It's a community action thing, and I don't think there has to be any bucks in it at all. I think that
that's what I'm trying to.
It seems to me that in any community, the people who see a problem are going to be willing to volunteer, if you would, to help solve it.
Okay, by encouraging and training community volunteers.
I think what we're going to have to stress here, too, when we start working with very small communities that maybe have 150.
You don't need one.
In population, a lot of times everybody knows everybody. If you could,
well, if you're a church group, you've already got a network of people. So, you know, like the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, some of the larger churches that have a big presence in, you know, different regions of the state will have probably more of one kind of church than another based on how they divvied it up in 1890 or whatever it was. But anyway, that would be one place where you've automatically got resources.
And then reaching out to the different the school districts, because the school districts themselves are always looking for something to keep their children in school, and they really are networking with Drug-Free America and all the different resources. And I think that the school districts could be part of that team, that you go to that regional school district and say, we're willing to do training, we want to pull together all the available resources. Now, where do you fit in? You know, go to your local governments, because oftentimes, you know, you can get a small increments of funding from the local governments, and go to the different youth organizations too.
In terms of getting someone trained to be a trainer, and yeah. Well, another thing that occurs to me, I wish Eileen Kazemnikov were here so she could tell us, but someone like Tanana Chiefs Conference, an entity like that that has a presence in lots of small rural communities, are going to already know the people in the community who are going to be willing to do this sort of thing. They'll know who to tap and say, hey, would you be interested? So that if Tanana Chiefs or some other group like that were willing to, you know, drum up money, do some fundraising to get a trainer and pay the transportation costs, which would also be high for, you know, taking trainers out to these villages, that might be a way too. There are lots of ways, I would think, to approach this.
And I know the CAMPFIRE program has summer water safety types of programs in numerous villages around the Yukon River. And they incorporate, they go to the school districts and say, what do you want? And they institute, along with their various water safety programs, they institute recycling, books, they do the RIF program. You know, so it can be, this could be part of the training in some other areas.
I think because I could keep going back to what I grew up in, when you grow up in an alcoholic home, that has become kind of an accepted type of behavior. But when you start wanting to make changes in how communities could become healthy, I think it keeps going back to how could you prevent that from happening to future generations? How could you prevent that kind of behavior?
One thing we heard when we were talking about incest in, you know, and other sexual abuse problems for children, I thought that was with our group too. Remember, it was brought up that education has to be a strong component, so that if the community is educated about the difficulty a child faces talking about incest or other sexual abuse or physical abuse or whatever, you know, if the community has been educated to embrace the child that comes forward rather than to reject and punish the child, the victim, that can be healthy for everybody involved. And I would think it would be the same, I'm no social worker, but I would think that would be the same sort of thing. Community education would have to be a strong component in any of these.
I think that should be in your paragraph on action needed.
Okay.
Joan, could you read over at the action what we...
Well, I've really got some scribbling here. Give me a minute to rewrite.
Okay.
Courage.
Talked about a lot of things. Let's see if we can get them in two sentences or less.
This is Merle again. You know, you're talking about the small villages. That's such a good point. And yet when you use, throw around a word like town hall meetings and all that, you think of something like a community of several thousand. But that same concept can be used, and I think that's what we're saying, is that we get someone from all these various groups together in a village, and they sit down and rap, and maybe someone could go out and give them a hand for a couple of days and get them started, and as soon as I think it will come together, they'll train themselves, they'll know.
Maybe encourage the town hall.
Well, encourage, here's what, kind of where I'm heading, trying to think, encourage community education and lay intervention in, well, it wouldn't have to be in anywhere, in, community education and lay intervention so that, and this wouldn't just apply to families with children running away either. We've talked about it.
Let's go back to that one. Let's put this on hold for right now, because
this
is pretty loaded to me, because I can't stress the importance. I can't stress the importance of. I think because alcohol creates such havoc in communities and stuff, I think those who choose to be sober and alcohol free, I think we have to find ways of encouraging and targeting that population, because I know that even whole villages could go on a drinking binge. If, you know.
Ellen, would you and Marilyn maybe be willing to work with me, maybe a conference call or something in the near future to work on rewriting this? Marilyn, would you be willing to do that?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, I'll flag this one for rewriting. Let's work on this because I think it's an important one, but you're right. We need to be to word it carefully and think it through. Okay.
Okay, recommendation number 4, action needed implementation of the strategies and recommendations proposed in the report entitled Children in Crisis, a report on runaway and homeless youth in Alaska, published in January 1992 by the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Family and Youth Services. Did you guys touch on this yesterday?
No.
Okay.
But it's proposed, referred to.
Yeah, we refer to this a lot.
Does anybody have problems with the wording?
Would you like me to, as long as we're talking, I can't do this unfortunately for Marilyn and Jim, but I did bring copies of these sections. Would you like to see those now? I was going to pull those out when we're talking about appendices, but I mean, it's brought up now.
Yeah. And we could just add those and attach it to this so that they would be outlined.
Right, yeah. This is what we're talking about here.
I do have a copy of that report, Joan. Patty gave me one yesterday.
Okay, what we're looking at is pages 9 through 25.
Marilyn, do you have a copy of this report?
Is that the crisis?
Yeah. Children in crisis.
They're planning another one, too, aren't they? Or is it just the date? Yeah, I
read
that.
Okay. As I looked at this report, I didn't find just a, you know, kind of concrete list of recommendations. They're sort of scattered throughout here. They look at the problems and then state what their desired outcomes would be.
It kind of goes along with recommendation number 3, because basically we're kind of dealing with the runaway issue here. So how do we need to consolidate maybe 3 and 4 to deal with the...
Well, 3 seemed to be heading into a much larger scope than just runaways. It seemed to me that we were starting to look at alcohol intervention and sexual abuse, lots of other issues in D3. Correct me if I'm wrong,
that was
the feeling I had.
I was there when we wrote this, and when we were, it was more of a big rap session and someone else was writing, but we had a lot of trouble with the word runaway versus homeless. A homeless could be, say, a child that wanted to finish high school or finish school and say the family moved someplace else, whereas a runaway, again, was trying to get away from the alcoholic environment or wherever, and he really didn't run away, he was just trying to get away, and we spent probably an hour just on that trying to get the definition, and they finally agreed that they would specifically break these apart. Both Andy Clancher, who is a detective from here in Homer, and Joe Lawler and I both felt that the word runaway had a much more of a negative connotation to it, that they were doing something, quote, bad, unquote. Whereas homeless, didn't have those words, that feeling to it. So I just wanted to put that in to tell you how this kind of ended up this way, because these are all a myriad of reasons why a kid does something or a person does something at any one time.
You're talking about how the report came to break it out into these two sections?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Health, Welfare, and Service 1, or whoever, or the folks that wrote it, I keep the...
DFYS.
Okay. They wanted to keep it separate, and in the end, we did that. And some of us, the rest of us wanted to kind of put it all together, but that's how it came out. And that's okay. I mean, we can look at it and tell what we're talking about.
Yeah, I guess I just realized that when you're running away, you're not really running away. Basically, you're going away for your own safety. So running from a problem and running from a probably an alcoholic home, basically.
That's exactly why. Now, they can go to a relative. They usually will go to a relative, an older brother or sibling, or maybe a grandparent or something like that. But if they're someplace that, you know, Alaska, if everybody's from someplace, so they don't have those extended families to rely on, then Native villages have more than that. Remember the week we talked about the, back a few weeks or a few times ago, we talked about maybe a child going from to his the next village because he had an uncle or he had a grandmother there that provided a safe haven.
The section that we're excerpting from that DFYS report talks about these things too, about why kids leave home and where they tend to go and how they end up homeless. So, you know, I think including this in our appendix is a good idea. I don't think we need to restate it all if we refer back to it.
Well, and the action statement just says implementation of these strategies and recommendations. So if everyone could agree that these recommendations and strategies are important, we can move on.
Okay.
And just make sure they're added in the appendix.
Yeah, and I refer to them in the explanation down here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to recommendation number 5. Action needed to designate a state coordinator who will play an active role in linking churches, schools, municipal government, village councils, housing authorities, and others who are trying to establish or provide services in rural Alaska.
This is very like that... what was it, C-something one that we had talked about yesterday, that is kind of central. Now, the coordinator function could be added onto that. Where were we talking about that? It was maybe an A. Look here.
Would that tie in with C-1 also about... About resource and
C1 and A12 were the two. We were going to combine C1 and A12. And this looks like another one to maybe put in with that. A resource and referral network is what C1 says. And A12 was where we talked about a centralized resource library.
A12
and C1.
So the state coordinator would be linking these folks for what? Tell me the story.
Well, so that if you have, this was in rural Alaska, I'm trying to remember here. Oh, down to the explanation, you kind of get a sense. Because there's nobody who's monitoring what efforts have been undertaken in different places. You might have one village, for example, with a very successful early intervention program. In fact, we heard about one where the village council had tapped community leaders and they were doing things like intervening in domestic violence. They would, you know, just go and point out to people in their community, look, this is not appropriate, you know, this is socially unacceptable behavior, we value our people better than that, you've got to stop beating your wife. And so, you know, there might be programs like that that are successful and established, but, you know, 5 miles upriver, they don't know about that and could be using the people who've already established a successful program in their own village to you know, start doing that. Or just linking services. If you don't know that a church is doing a food basket program, but you know, over at the electric company realize, hey, you know, I've got a homeless family here or whatever, you know, it's that sort of thing. You would have a central place you could call and say, do you know of anything that I could turn to? And again, the Homeless Coalition was kind of where we were looking. If we're successful in establishing that, it could be a real resource statewide.
Because we have healthy and unhealthy communities too.
Right.
So
right.
There's a difference on who's in leadership. And
yeah. You know. I'm just trying to figure out, because if we had like a state coordinator, my vision of that would be someone who could establish a training, say, okay,
yes,
we're going to Fort Yukon, this person's going to come in and talk about sexual abuse and prevention and intervention, and we're going to stop at Fort Yukon, we're going up to Nome, we're going here, kind of set up a circuit kind of thing. And I think of that network, that resource, is just to refer, oh yeah, so-and-so does a real good job of presentations, and not really. If we have a state coordinator, there might be some money and actual linkage with, you know, to really make it happen.
So for training, you're talking about adding a training component.
One of the things that is big hot in Fairbanks is the volunteer coordinators. And we have a volunteer action center, and it's through United Way has established this. And what they do is it's a volunteer action coordinator, and she goes around to different small-time organizations, nonprofits, and schools, and talks to them about hiring a volunteer coordinator for 10 hours a week, and their main job is just linking folks like this. It's a great concept because it doesn't cost very much, and that person's around, and that's their whole job, is finding volunteers to do different things. So, I guess...
Well, that would be exactly the sort of person this coordinator could know about to refer you to. You know, if there are things going on like that, like United Way is already doing this, then if, somebody wanted to start up another soup kitchen outside, on the outskirts of town, out by the military base or something, they could just call this central coordinator and say, well, I don't have any help. Do you have any idea how I could raise money or something? And, there they would find out, well, geez, they're volunteer coordinators. Have you called this person? That sort of a resource. Rather than trying to take on the functions that other people are already doing,
right.
I think the thought here was that it would be real good to have somebody in this state who knows what's happening and can actively seek out that information and kind of maintain a current database of information.
Okay. So are we still going to consolidate that with A, 12, and C1?
It would make sense.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of a resource. Okay, so I'll just mark that to combine this, and this will be one that needs to be bicycled around everybody again. By the time it's done, it's going to be kind of a different creature. Okay.
So we're combining D5 with?
We're combining D5, A12, and C1.
Okay, is everybody ready to move on to D6? Mm-hmm. Action needed, maintain or increase funding for domestic violence and sexual assault programs statewide.
This did come up yesterday, and I have a note here that we want to combine this with E6. Here we are. E6 says...
expense.
Is this right?
Seven.
E7, this is the wrong one.
Oh, okay.
E7. Maintain domestic violence programs at adequate levels to ensure effective protection and advocacy to permit victims and their children to remain in their homes, which is essentially the same. So we're going to combine those two.
Okay. D7, recommendation number 7, action needed, begin community education programs about incest and other child sexual and physical abuse. Is there any things in the...
Just back to the first word there, begin, I don't know, we could encourage to establish, or
because I don't like the way it's worded, begin, because I think there are some programs already in place. We just need to incorporate them with.
How about encourage community education programs?
Well, encourage using available resources.
Basically, what you have in place are programs, but you want to implement those what's
maybe
already in place.
How about taking programs out? That implies, another entrenched bureaucracy, which may not be necessary to this at all. Encourage community education about incest and other child sexual and physical abuse.
What about utilize? Basically, what you're doing is you're not implementing. You're going to be utilizing what's already available out there.
Utilize existing resources to encourage, okay?
Okay.
And why do we want to do that? I think we need to add something there, like did down at the bottom, that to prevent, well, we're talking about homelessness, and how can we?
Basically, because this is a substance and alcohol abuse issue, I wonder if we could add that to what we were going to do with Marilyn. On
D4 or D3.
Because basically what you're going to have to do with that issue is you're going to have to address that issue anyway, about substance abuse, alcohol abuse,
okay,
intervention,
and the whole. When these things happen many times, kids are homeless or run away.
Yeah.
So combine this one with D3. Okay.
It seems to me it's also similar to Echo 7, E7.
Domestic violence. That's a funding problem, a state funding problem. I mean, the domestic violence shelters have got budgets now that are being cut, right? You can tell us more about this, Ellen. You're on the domestic violence.
They're proposing to cut 20% of our budget, and we're going to have our meetings next month. So, but we haven't found out how much they actually have cut out of our budget. We haven't heard yet.
And you know, we can talk in E7 and D6 about what budget cuts can mean, you know, why it's important to maintain funding. You can work with me on that, maybe to come up with examples of how cutting those budgets could increase the numbers of homeless people.
I have a problem with that, because if you don't have the money, you know, you don't have the money. You have to find other ways of, I think you have to become innovative when you don't have the money. You're going to have to utilize what's already available in the communities. Like, I think more and more, we're going to have to involve church groups and places like that, and volunteers, and those. And we have a lot of good people in communities that could help us out, probably.
So you don't want to maintain domestic violence funding?
No, that's another issue. We have to maintain those, but if, just like everybody else, if you don't have the money in the state budget, you're going to have to find other means of maintaining these programs. You know what I mean? You don't have the money. Okay, they're proposing to cut our budget, but...
I need to ask, are we talking about E7, D6, which are about maintenance of domestic violence program budgets, or are we talking about D7, which is an entirely different thing?
I think we're trying to talk about whether to combine those two, and I think we're talking about funding in D6 and E7, and we're talking about education in...
I thought we were combining D7 and D3.
Right.
That's sort of decided,
because
that's all about grassroots community education and intervention programs. But then, who was it? Was it Jim brought up
Jim's
putting D6, D7 in there? And it's really a separate question, right? Funding levels, if we're going to talk about them at all, are a separate question than grassroots community education intervention.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we talking about... Are we back on D6, D7? D7, I'm assuming, has been settled. I mean, if we move on, we would go to D8, but we've seemed to move back to D6, right?
And I think what Jim's point was that D6 talks about sexual assault, too. But, you know, can you see the difference that we're talking about between the education and the funding, Jim? Does that make sense?
Yes, I can, and I stand corrected.
Okay, are we on D8?
Okay, so at this time, we're going to combine D3, D6, and D7.
We're combining D3 and D7, which are about community education programs. We're combining D6 and E7, which both talk about adequate funding for domestic violence programs.
Yes.
Okay, D8.
Shoot me if I'm wrong. Okay, recommendation 8, action needed, encourage the creation of low-cost village housing that will be affordable from old age assistance payments. Encourage the creation of housing designed for aging in place. Encourage the creation of housing design.
Now, yeah, I need some assistance. This that, I took that, almost word from my notes. And old age assistance payments were what was said at the time. I have no idea what that is. Does anyone here know what we're talking about there?
Okay, basically when we were talking...
This is Jim. Old age assistance is the state's program under the Adult Public Assistance Program. It pays $784 a month to individuals and about $1,160 a month to married couples.
Okay, I'm glad I asked, because I think Connie Seid was the one who, it was either Connie or who was the other one we had with us that day, can't think, she's great, remember?
Yes, Pat O'Brien.
Pat O'Brien, that's right, yes.
Okay, basically this was when we were talking about the...
Supplement to the federal SSI program, it's the state's supplement to that program.
Okay. Well, now we know what we're talking about. Okay, and this was, remember when we asked, you know, what would you like to see? We asked those women, and this came up there, I think. I don't have my notes in front of me, I left them in general, but.
Since this is AHFC and Mitzi's gone from the room, can we come back to this?
This isn't AHFC.
Well, they talk about a senior housing loan fund.
Well,
you guys know enough about that.
Well, actually, it is sort of AHSC. That Senior Housing Loan Fund was the fund that was created as a result of Senator Duncan's bill several years ago. And it's not, as I recall, this is old, just remembering when I analyzed the bill for Senator Fahrenkamp, it's not just for low-income housing, I don't think. I think it's just designed to encourage the creation of a bigger stock of housing that's accessible for elderly Alaskans. Different kinds of things. But we were told by Connie Seid, who was with the Older Alaskans Commission, that even though that loan fund has been in place for, I think, 2 years now, my memory is it's been there for 2 years, not a single loan has yet been made.
That's right.
Because AHFC, who sort of, so weird, this is a weird creature. This is one of those really weird things. It's like AHFC sort of administers it somehow, even though it's its own entity, it's its own loan fund. AHFC is somehow involved with deciding who qualifies for the loan payments. You're right, we need Mitzi. Because apparently AHFC, according to Connie, is the reason no loans have been made from this fund. They can't find qualified borrowers for some reason. So yeah, you're right, let's come back when Mitzi gets back. She'll love it.
Okay, number nine, action needed, routinely collect and publish statistics about housing and homelessness, especially in rural Alaska. Does that tie in with one?
With the CHAS report?
Yeah.
Or should it be in the network resource thing?
I
think we should tie in with number one, because basically we're going to have to get real statistics.
It came from the CHAS anyway. If you look under the explanation, this came from one of the CHAS recommendations to develop a system for more accurately counting the homeless. I think I've got a typo there. Anyway, that was from the CHAS on page 44.
Okay.
So yeah, this would be a good one to combine with.
And routine and collect and publish, are we talking less than yearly? Because the CHAS will only be updated yearly.
What was your question again?
The CHAS will only be updated on a yearly basis, where it says routinely collected and published statistics.
Yeah.
Does that mean quarterly, or does that mean, or just have them available, or do you need?
I don't remember where we got this one.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think part of this is not only in the CHAS, but in other areas where you're trying to gather statistics, there's just a real lack of statistics
that's
people
true.
To take them.
Yeah.
So I think that's why this was created, and I think I could see this as part of the coalition, you know, doing the coordination of data from the different areas and then putting that into a report.
Well, the coalition couldn't do it very well, they couldn't force people to keep the statistics. unless they had some kind of clout. Like, I would think the municipality, for example, has some clout because it administers block grants,
right?
So it's got some money to leverage its request, whereas the coalition has no clout. It's all voluntary efforts. The state has got some clout to enforce.
Then this would be part of the CHAZ data gathering.
And may perhaps, if the CHAZ and whatever, however MITC structures it, we could just glean her information, take it from her and publish it through the coalition, possibly.
It's a good thing you're back, MITC. We need
because,
to.
Okay, on the explanations in the second page, this is what I would like to stress, is until policymakers have accurate data about homelessness, especially rural homelessness, Alaska lacks the ability to convince the federal government that waivers or exceptions are essential to the well-being of rural Alaskans, because we don't have evidence. Or basically what we're going to have to do is they're going to have to prove that there is a need. But, and also.
Uh-huh. And that's, you know, I was just looking for how, you know, how often you wanted this collected and published, just to narrow down. If the CHAZ is fine, that's fine. And if the need was more a quarterly basis, possibly somebody like the coalition or somebody could steal MITC's numbers and publish them in a newsletter or something like that. If we could stick this under the CHAZ, and that way that would be the collection.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'd like that.
Yeah, okay.
There's a real problem with gearing up at this point to do quarterlies.
How come?
Betsy Kinney would probably even address that better than I can, but you know, we're having trouble even here in Anchorage getting it going and organized. It's going to take a while to put a system in place, and then once we get it in place, I think it's going to be difficult to get quarterly data collected. I mean, it's going to be a major effort for somebody to actually get that. I mean, if the coalition had staff, that would be a logical thing.
How are you going to get it through the for the CHAZ? I mean, would you just, you know, take like a snapshot for a day or something? Or
that's kind of how we did it for the last CHAZ. If we can just get people collecting data, then at least annually we could take it on ourselves to compile it. And the first thing that has to happen is people have to be collecting the data on some kind of a uniform database, like the cover sheet that they're going to be using in Anchorage.
And I think we have to, and I don't think shelters and folks in the community realize how important those numbers are. I mean, it's one more thing that we're asking them to do, and it's a pain.
Well, that's why I don't think it's we can go to them and say, we need you to compile this right. And submit it as a bureaucratic thing quarterly. You know, another recommendation, I'm trying to think if it actually came out as a recommendation in the CHAZ or not, something that we certainly talked about was the fact that people are getting state funding and doing shelters and homeless support activities, and that they're not required to report anything back to the state.
Yeah. And that's along the incentive line.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, when this gets in gear in the collection, I think, when people realize that these numbers are essential, or as the CHAZ, the people, you know, I didn't know what the CHAZ was till a few years ago, and people don't know. Even the people that are getting McKinney funds probably don't know how they even got them.
Well, one of the things that we had kicked around, like I said, I don't have my CHAZ in front of me, and I can't remember the format it ended up in there. But one of the things that we wanted to see was a requirement that agencies who were receiving state funding and were providing services to people who fell within the definition of homeless, that they be required by the state to report statistics back to the appropriate state agency, which would make, you know, the job to some degree a little easier, because then we could go to a couple of state agencies and get those statistics, and then agencies that were independent, say like Rescue Mission, if we could just get them to buy off on doing the cover sheets, then we could go in and compile that information as long as they're collecting it.
And I think this needs to be done on a routine basis, because you need to look at the flow of how folks are coming in and out of the shelters and
yeah.
the seasonal things, and so that you can get a good overall picture of what is happening in every community.
Well, and I think the small nonprofits that do deal with homeless, and they're starting to realize that they need to collect numbers to convince their supporters that they have a problem, you know, that yes, we have a bed capacity of 35, and we had 150 people, you know, spend the night the other night. Those are, So I think they are collecting them, but I think getting it from their special shelter nonprofit into a central is probably going to be the problem.
And, you know, maybe leaving this as a standalone recommendation, but changing it to require data collection from agencies that receive state grants, state or other public funding, grants or funding, requires a condition of the grant or funding that statistics be collected and routinely reported to the whoever gave them the grant, who could then turn it over to the CHAZ or give them directly. Well, for enforcement, it would have to go to the whatever entity makes the grant.
It's important that the statistics be collected on a uniform database, mm-hmm. that we're asking the same questions and collecting the same information from everybody. And that's like the problem with the DCRA study and the CHAZ.
So in a manner prescribed by AHFC. Are on a form provided or something like that.
Well, I don't want to put us in the position of, say, telling Department of Health and Human Services how they have to collect data, but we could maybe there could be a separate statement that says the state agencies ought to collaborate on what information is important.
On a standardized form.
Certainly education might be interested in some of this data, too. If we're going to snapshot stuff, let's do it.
Well, and the shelter folks should be networking. I mean, the fact that we didn't know there was a shelter in Kotzebue, you know, we've got a coalition working with many, many shelters and represented, and we had no idea there was a shelter in Kotzebue. So what other shelters are out there that we don't know about? There should be some type of networking with those folks, either through, you know, their own associations or through the coalition.
And the trouble that Patty Becker had collecting information for her report was a real, you know, indicator that, you know, I don't know how she beat it out of everybody.
We need to help folks understand that collectively the money that comes into the state for all of them to share is in large degree contingent, or the money that comes out of the legislature for them all to share is contingent to a large degree upon the accuracy and the detail of this kind of information.
And I think people can buy into that. I think with the idea that we could help do some training for service providers, or the more money we have coming in, or the more established programs and the more data we have, the more services that they could get. You know, that carrot you have to dangle in front of people to get something.
We do need to make it as painless as possible, because these folks do run on a shoestring, and they resent doing administrative work instead of working with the people in
need. Well, they really don't have time. And that could be an option, that maybe they could find a volunteer that would be their job, is compile the data to turn it in once a month or whatever.
What we require at HFC on a couple grants that we've made is we have required a quarterly report on a prescribed form of very basic stuff. Including the financial information, obviously, because we're making a financial investment. But certainly other state agencies should be asking for the same degree of accountability.
Certainly. So why don't I, rather than combine this with D1, let's rewrite this as a carrot for data collection recommendation.
You know, we could put something nice in here somewhere that says that that we as CHAZ coordinators would be happy to give some technical assistance in that.
Well, I was thinking, too, that the coalition could maybe offer to help with, you know, like, if there's a standard daily form that people just go, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, mark stuff off on, the coalition could help by compiling the statistics if we have staff.
When we get our volunteer staff person, we can have them make a phone call to them,
right.
Say, okay, give me your numbers for this month, and
then,
you know, set that cycle up.
We might be able to involve local government people in some areas, too. I mean, like, in Anchorage, we could look to the Muni to be pulling that all together for us. You know, they're willing to do that.
This is Marilyn and Homer, and it's kind of interesting that you're talking about this, because I'm going to personally start next week and go to all the 2 days a week that our food bank gives food, and the one day the Salvation Army, just kind of personally do what you're saying, do what they can't do because they're too busy. And I would really appreciate if anybody has some forms on the housing, because I might be able to just kind of work these two together if I spend a little time with folks. And I would appreciate that. You can either send it to my home here at Homer, which is the post office box 2043, or here at the teleconference if you have a fax. I don't have one, but Charlene always takes care of me here.
Meryl, this is Missy Barber. None of us here have that form. municipality of Anchorage Health and Human Services?
I got her number.
I'm looking up her number. She could plug you into that. We'd be happy, I'm sure, to fax the information to you.
Thanks a lot.
Marge has the number.
Her telephone number is 343-6310. And her fax number is 258-6379.
That's at work phone, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'll rewrite this one and bicycle around to Mitzi, Eileen, and maybe Marilyn. Would that be good so that, you know, as that's kind of a good cross-section to take a look at. We'll rewrite this as a recommendation that data be collected as a condition of state grants or other funding, or public funding, I should make it, something like that. D8, we
Marilyn,
waited for you.
Do you know when the fall conference is going to be? Has there been a date set for the Children in Crisis fall conference?
I haven't heard of any at this point, but who's speaking?
This is Marge.
Well, sure. Give me your phone number and I'll call you if I can dig up any information. Lucy Stanton being in Savannah might know, and I can give her a call.
Okay. The office number is 562-2813, extension 355, and I work for the Alaska State Housing Authority until July 1st.
You mean I have a month to do this?
No, it'll probably be the same telephone number. It will be known as the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Deasis has joined us, by the way. Has anybody else joined us that I haven't announced? No.
Lenore?
Oh, and Lenore, what's your Savington? Lenore Savington is here, too, from ROCAP. Sorry. Speak up.
Okay, are we going back to
D8. Yeah.
Okay.
Mitzi? I apologize for leaving the room. I thought you'd take longer to deal with some of the other ones in between.
Okay, D8 says action needed encourages the creation of low-cost village housing that will be affordable from old age assistance payments. Encourage the creation of housing designed for aging in place. Begin making loans from the Alaska Senior Housing Loan Fund.
Can we talk about the Senior Housing Loan Fund for a minute?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying.
Why is there?
It's problematic, and it's problematic for reasons at this point beyond the corporation's control, and I want everybody to understand that. That legislation was written in such a way, it is statutory that we can't offer subsidies, that the loans have to be made at market rate, meaning at our cost of funds, plus a certain percentage of the cost of issuance. So, in essence, that works out to market rate. The reason for that bill, and maybe that would help everybody understand why...